From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, True Tales from the Casey Vault. Looking forward to that. Edgar Casey. Here's what's happening. The Federal Bureau of Investigation searched the offices of a Colorado businesswoman who operates a funeral home and a body donation company from the same building. The raid in Montrose, Colorado, follows a Reuters report last month in which the former funeral home employees expressed concern that the owner was running a side business, dissecting donated bodies and selling the parts to medical training and research organizations. North Korea is only months away now from obtaining the capability to hit U.S. territory with a nuke weapon and must be disarmed, according to a U.S. envoy. Let's check in with Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. John, I think you're right. After the Olympics, something's going to happen.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, we've said this for weeks now that we know we're in a hiatus period right now until everybody clears out of Seoul, South Korea. But, you know, the development of a nuclear-tipped ICBM by North Korea is the nightmare scenario that has been talked about for the, you know, since the Carter administration, since Reagan debated Carter about nuclear disarmament, that a terrorist or rogue nation would get their hands on a nuclear capability to be able to hit the United States. And I think that, you know, Trump is going to, if he fulfills any promise in his presidency, and he's going to fulfill the promise that North Korea will not get a nuclear-tipped ICBM. And I think if you look at world markets, and George, this, to me, the sell-off that went on over the last 5 days is pretty spectacular to people. I think when you see the 10% evaporate out of your pension funds and your 401ks and IRAs, you realize that a military confrontation with North Korea will have a catastrophic effect on the stock market.
Huge. But here's my other question to you, John. Why can't we have detente here and simply go there? Yes, there's no question the guy's a nut job. Kim Jong-un is a nut job. But why can't we go, you know, Russia's not concerned about him nuking them. China's not concerned about it. Why can't we go to him and say, look, let's be buddies here?
Well, the main reason we can't is because he's a supreme enemy of the United States that has already made a series of nuclear threats, and the calculation of making, you know, the diplomacy element where you go there and you try to find some common ground and create some peace opportunity at the expense of allowing him, seeding him a nuclear device that could hit anywhere in the United States is just not acceptable. So I think, unfortunately, for, you know, Trump has a lot of very bad options, a very bad option to try to take out North Korea. There's no question about that. But the other side of that is a nuclear-armed state that has already said that North Korean ICBM missiles, and this is what was said by their foreign minister at the UN, will inevitably, they use the word inevitable, hit the United States. That's a shot across the bow.
That's an act of war, as far as I'm concerned. John, thanks so much. And as John just mentioned, stocks bounced back Tuesday in another day of volatility of the Wall Street era as the Dow swung through triple-digit gains and losses on the heels of that historic sell-off yesterday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average soared 567 points today. Let's check in with registered investment advisor Mish Shedlock. Well, it bounced back like a rubber ball, Mish.
Well, not quite.
A little rubber ball.
George. There were some hedge funds that blew up, lost $300 million, wiped out their entire hedge fund. I was reading a story out there. A guy posted his account on Twitter, and he said, I lost $4 million, and people said, well, I don't believe you. Prove it. He made $4 million trading VIX options, trading the VIX over the last 4 years. Poof. All of it wiped out. He posted his statement. So people are playing around with these instruments, George. They don't know what they are into. I think volatility has returned. You've heard me say, I think the stock market's extremely overvalued. Folks, take some chips off the table. That's what I'm saying, George.
Sooner than later. Billionaire casino magnate Steve Wynn stepped down as CEO of Wynn Resorts tonight. Wynn, who has donated millions to the Republican Party, has been accused of sexual misconduct by several people who have worked at his Las Vegas casinos, according to a report in the Wall Street Journal that came out late January, but he has stepped down as of tonight. U.S. cities dominate the world's top 10 most traffic-congested urban areas. Number one, of course, Los Angeles. SpaceX, the Falcon Heavy rocket, has launched successfully, making history as the world's most powerful rocket and putting a proverbial feather in Elon Musk's cap. Let's check in with space historian Robert Zimmerman. Robert, this was an amazing, amazing rocket launch today.
This was the second big game changer from SpaceX. Their landing of first stages and reusing them was the first. This was equally important. This is now the most powerful rocket. It matches or is only matched or beaten in capability by the Saturn V, the shuttle, and Russia's Energia rocket. And none of this exists anymore. This one exists. It costs practically nothing to put a payload on it compared to every other rocket in the world. They've got three more launches, scheduled sometime later this year with this rocket, and those are commercial launches.
Jeez.
It was really spectacular to watch, George.
Oh, it was something. I was looking at the video, and we've got a clip on it.
It was nail-biting because they'd never launched three cores at one time, and they had to launch and then separate well. And then the mid-core stage had to continue to fire and then separate properly, and they did that. And then the most spectacular thing of all, and I've got this on my website, a picture of this, is a picture of the two sides cores landing simultaneously like synchronized swimmers on two launch pads within sight of each other at Kennedy. Just amazing. They recovered the two outside cores. Those were both reused cores. The central core stage, they lost it, hit the barge, but it didn't land safely. That is a minor problem. The Tesla cherry red car is now in solar orbit, and its orbit takes it out into the asteroid belt, not just to Mars. It'll circle, and it's going to be circling the sun for millions and millions of years without any problem, unless someone goes and gets it onto their own car.
Well, great discovery today. And, of course, we've got the video of the launch in the news at coasttocoastam.com. Just scroll down and you'll see it in the news section there. It's just magnificent the way this thing just took off. Two people killed, 150 injured after a 6.4 magnitude earthquake struck near the coast of Taiwan, leaving several people trapped under the rubble of toppled buildings. One whole hotel just tipped right over. Some residents along the east coast of the United States received a false tsunami warning on Tuesday morning after a private company sent out an alert following a monthly test by the National Weather Service. Happening way too much. Rising seas. We've talked about them before. We're going to talk about it again. The book is called The Water Will Come. Jeff Goodell is next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Sea levels are rising, and what does that mean to the coastal areas all around this planet? Our special guest tonight, Jeff Goodell, is an American author and contributing editor to Rolling Stone magazine. His writings are known for focusing on energy and the environment. He is a 2016-17 fellow at the New America Foundation. He's written books about his upbringing in Silicon Valley, the story of computer hacker Kevin Mitnick, who's been on our program, the rescue of the trapped Pennsylvania coal miners back in 2002, and later an expose of big coal. This latest work is called The Water Will Come, Rising Seas, Sinking Cities, and the Remaking of the Civilized World. Jeff, that's kind of a scary thought, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a scary thought, but it's also a kind of real thought about the world that we're creating.
How fast are the water levels rising?
Well, they're rising. They're not rising very fast right now. 4 or 5 millimeters a year right now, but the issue is not what's going to happen now. It's that they were going to sort of exponentially increase as the ice caps in Greenland and Antarctica continue to melt, and their melt accelerates. So right now, the sort of scientists, best science says the high end melt by the end of the century is 7 feet, and could continue going after that. So that's the kind of thing we're looking at right now.
And regardless of whether people believe in man-made climate change or that this is an Earth cycle, that it happens, can it be stopped at all?
No. I mean, you know, I am a very strong believer that this is, you know, driven by burning of fossil fuels and the building up of CO2 in the atmosphere, and that's what's warming the planet. I think the science is sort of very clear about that. But the problem with sea level rise is that because we've already heated the planet up as much as we have, there's a lot of heat built up into the oceans and what scientists call thermal inertia already in our atmosphere. So that basically means that even if we did cut carbon dioxide pollution to zero in the very near future, we would still see significant amounts of sea level rise. That's one of the reasons why I called my book "The Water Will Come," not "The Water Might Come," or "The Water Will Come If We Don't All Go to Solar Panels," or something like that.
It's
kind of a done deal.
What's strange too, Jeff, is after my interview with you, I'm going to be dealing with an author who has written about Edgar Cayce, the late American prophet, and Edgar Cayce's predictions were massive sea level risings, where if you look at a map of the United States, you can't recognize things. I mean, I think St. Louis becomes the West Coast of the United States. It's frightening, isn't it?
It is. I think that kind of scenario, though, is certainly possible, but not certainly in the near term. I mean, we're talking about, you know, centuries for that kind of thing to happen. But, I mean, you know, you look at the Earth's history and, you know, sea level rise has, the sea levels have fluctuated by, you know, hundreds of feet. The question is how soon it's going to happen and sort of how high it's going to rise.
And
it doesn't take much, right? Even 2 or 3 feet of sea level rise will have devastating impacts on places like Miami and Norfolk and New York and Boston, Galveston, lots of places like that.
And other regions on the planet, I guess, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you can think of the oceans as a big bathtub, and it goes up everywhere. And so, you know, places like Bangladesh, where you have enormous numbers of people living in very low places, are hugely at risk. Places in India, China, Shanghai is a very vulnerable city. You know, you have 145 million people around the globe living less than 3 feet above sea level. And so you can just imagine the kind of refugee crisis we're going to have as these waters go up.
Jeff, with the actual flooding of the coastlines, will there be much warning? I mean, will we get weeks, months, years, or is it just you're just going to wake up one day and, you know, half of New York is underwater?
No, we're not going to wake up one day and have half of New York underwater. I mean, in the past, geologic records show that there have been moments in Earth's history where we've had 13 feet of sea level rise in a century. That's sort of the high end. So, I mean, what we're looking at, you know, worst case scenario is, you know, a foot and a half of sea level rise in a decade. So, you know, it's not going to be the kind of thing that is going to happen sort of as you watch the water. But even something like a foot and a half of sea level rise in a decade would be just devastating, and it would be huge economic consequences to something like that.
Because a lot of people feel, hey, this is not going to happen in my lifetime, so I'm not going to worry about it. That's really not the right attitude to take, is it?
It's not the right attitude at all, because, first of all, we don't know how fast this could happen. As I said, in the past, we've seen 13 feet in a century, which means, you know, like I said, a foot and a half or so a decade. There's increasing evidence that West Antarctica is very unstable, and the large ice cliffs there could collapse into the sea and cause fairly rapid sea level. sea level rise. But it's also really important that, like I said, even small, relatively small amounts will have big, big consequences. And I think that one of the biggest risks that we face with sea level rises is economic collapse of real estate prices in coastal areas, which, you know, can happen very quickly and will have a devastated impact on the sort of revenues for these coastal cities and huge impacts on our national economy.
Jeff Goodell with us. His book is called The Water Will Come. You also wrote a book called How to Cool the Planet. And, you know, there's a tie in there. So you are deeply involved in just trying to save this planet, Jeffrey.
Well, there's a lot of saving to do. I mean, I think that, you know, we're in a lot of trouble. Geoengineering that I wrote about in my previous book is this idea of, you know, kind of large-scale manipulation of the Earth's climate by reflecting away a little bit of sunlight, putting particles in the stratosphere, or essentially creating what are like artificial volcanoes that act as little reflectors to keep the sun, some of the sunlight from hitting the planet. I want to really underscore that I don't think this is something that is happening now. Some people do believe that. I do not think, I know in fact that this is not happening. But in the future, I think that it's a kind of technology that we may turn to as things get desperate and we need to cool off the planet quickly.
And in terms, you know, the president wants to build a wall along the Mexican-U.S. border to keep people from coming into this country. What about building a seawall all along the coastal areas? Not practical, I guess.
Well, not practical in the sense of very expensive, but it's also not practical for, like, in places like Miami, for example. One of the reasons Miami's in so much trouble is that it's built on a kind of limestone that's very porous. So the entire South Florida is basically built on Swiss cheese, which means that even if you did build seawalls along the coast there, the water would go kind of right underneath it and come up on the other side. So there are a lot of reasons why seawalls won't work in some places. They're planning right now a big barrier around Lower Manhattan, a wall called the Big U that's going to protect Wall Street and all that, and it's going to cost several billion dollars. That kind of thing is practical, and because it's the most valuable real estate on Earth, and so it's worth spending, you know, several billion dollars to protect it. But in many places, the sort of economic value is just not there to spend the money to do it.
How many people are we talking about would have to be displaced along the coastlines of just the United States?
Well, it depends on, you know, I don't know exact numbers. You know, there have been some studies showing that, you know, with 6 feet of sea level rise, which is sort of, you know, mid to high end for the end of the century, you know, 2.5 million people will be displaced just out of Florida. So, you know, we're talking about tens of millions of people. And, you know, when you think about the refugee crisis that we're having in the world right now, this kind of thing would make the refugee crisis today look like a sort of high school prom. I mean, we're talking about massive numbers of people displaced.
And this isn't a matter of if, it's a matter of when, I take it.
Exactly. I mean, that's a really important thing, is that this is not speculative. This is sort of as real as gravity. I mean, this is something that will happen. It's a question of what the time scales are, how soon, you know, how high the water will rise. But given the amount of heat that's already built up in the Earth's atmosphere and in the Earth's ocean, this is a done deal.
Aren't there some island nations, Jeff, that are just petrified that their entire little countries are going to sink?
Absolutely. Places like the Marshall Islands, the Maldives, many other islands in the South Pacific are, you know, it's basically a kind of existential crisis for them. They know that their nations are going to cease to exist. And what does that mean? How do you, you know, do if they all move to, you know, Australia or something like that, does their nation exist if they are in a different place? Can they still call themselves, you know, the Marshall Islands? I mean,
what does it mean to lose not just your sort of real estate and your beaches, but your entire nation?
We're coming back for more in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Check in with us if you live on the coasts. We're with Jeff Goodell, and his book is called The Water Will Come. Hey, some great events coming up, live stage shows. I have so much fun doing these because not only do I get a chance to do my thing, but I get to meet a lot of people, and we do meet and greets afterwards. So Salt Lake City, March 10th, Scottsdale, Arizona, April 21st, Las Vegas, Nevada, June 9th at the Silverton Casino. Now, how do you find out more about this? Just go to coasttocoastam.com. Right at the top, there is a little section there that says events. You click that, and then all the events come up, and you can do that. Now, if you're not computer savvy, have somebody go there and get the toll-free numbers for you because they're all there. And welcome back to Coast, Jeff Goodell with us. His book is called The Water Will Come. Jeff, where do we get the book? Is it available, of course, on Amazon and places like that?
Yeah, it's available on Amazon. It should be in bookstores all across the country. It's published by Little Brown, one of the biggest publishers in America.
Great
widely
people.
Available.
Great people. You have talked a little bit about how the impact of these rising sea levels will have on our Navy bases, and because they're all over the planet. What happens there?
Yeah, I visited our largest naval base, Naval Station Norfolk, with then Secretary of State John Kerry, and you know it was really striking to see what's going on there. I mean, I was with Secretary Kerry when he asked the commander of the base how much time does this base have left to be operational given the rising seas. And the base commander told him, 20 to 50 years.
Jeez, so that's it?
Within 20 years, it's possible that, this base that employs 75,000 people and is the center of operations for, all of our operations in Europe and in the Middle East, will have to be moved or shut down or something. It's a big problem. I mean, because the military can spend a lot of money and build seawalls on the base and raise the piers and do all the kinds those kinds of things. And obviously, sea level rise is not a problem for boats per se, but it is a problem for the community all around the base. And you have 75,000 people who have to get to the base. You have railroads that have to bring materials to the base. And so saving the base basically means saving the entire region from flooding and sea level rise, which is a huge task and a huge expense for the Pentagon.
Jeff, theoretically, how far inland would the waters go?
Well, it depends on, the topography of the terrain. One of the reasons why South Florida is at such risk is because it's so low and flat.
Yeah.
So basically with just a modest 10 or 12 feet of sea level rise, and you have beachfront property in Orlando. It's very different in a place like, say, Seattle, where you've got a very mountainous coastline. So it really depends on the topography of the place.
To the phones now we go, east of the Rockies, Greg in Dumont, New Jersey. Hey, Greg, go ahead.
George, thank you for speaking about this important topic. But to your guest, it's two things. Admiral David Tibley, who's retired, he's a chief meteorologist for the Pentagon. He teaches at Penn State now. He was charged, I don't know how many years ago, about the whole thing about climate change, and they showed the nightmare that's going to happen, like you're declaring here, with Norfolk and about 100 bases around the world with sea rise. We here in the metropolitan area in New York have noticed about 2 hours outside of here, rural Pennsylvania, upstate New York, they're building large bridges on these state highways. It doesn't make any sense. And I spoke to a friend of mine who's an engineer from college. And he said, well, they're just planning how to 20, as you're explaining, 20, 30, 50 years from now, that all the heavy industry in this area will eventually have to be relocated in land, and they're putting the bridge work in now for the railroads and the roads. I heard that. I heard it once. I heard it from another person recently that this is what they're doing. And if you look at the whole corridor from, Baltimore up to Boston, they're saying it's going to be eventually need to be relocated. What's your take on that, sir?
Interesting take, Jeff. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I kind of, you know, wish there were that kind of foresight and planning going on in our infrastructure.
It's not planned, really, is it?
Yeah, I mean, I you know, it's all of my 3 years of research, I have not come across any kind of urban planners or engineers who are thinking ahead that much about where this is all going to go. I wish that it were true, and I do think that, what the caller is saying about heavy industry having to relocate and is all absolutely true. And David Titley, who he mentioned, is a great guy and really knows what he's talking about. But I honestly don't see any evidence that there's this kind of foresight in our kind of rebuilding of our infrastructure right now.
Is it going to be panic at that time? I mean, Vidge, I just had a story that Los Angeles, of course, is the number one traffic-snarled city in the country. But what's it going to be like when people have to, you know, hit the road and get out of Dodge?
Well, I think that that kind of mass exodus thing is going to happen much more around sort of big events like hurricanes and things like, as we know, you know, we had a really horrific hurricane season this last year. One of the things that climate scientists have long said is going to be a consequence of the sort of warming atmosphere is that we're going to have more intense hurricanes. And we certainly saw evidence of that this year. So I think you're going to see, as you see more intense storms, which are going to be more damaging as the seas get higher, it means that storm surges are going to be higher and push the water that much farther up into the land and into the cities. I think around those kinds of events is when you're going to see the big sudden mass exoduses. I think with sea level rise itself, it's going to be a kind of more gradual migration.
Do you see weather, Jeff, as more intense, where the tornadoes will be bigger and stronger, the hurricanes will be bigger and stronger?
Yeah, I mean, I think that kind of thing is pretty clearly predicted by climate scientists. I think we're beginning to see evidence of it now. I think that you can't ascribe, any specific storm to climate change, but I think that the overall weather patterns that we're going to see changing and the intensifications of storms is a pretty clear result of where we're going.
Eric's with us in Mitchell, South Dakota now. Hello, Eric.
Hello, George.
Hey, good to have you with us.
Thank you. I have a theory. Why don't we just build canals into, like, the Salton Sea in California and Death Valley and stuff like that and divert the flood rising waters into these dead salt beds?
I think, and you correct me, Jeff, we're talking about too much water. You can't control it.
Yeah, and we're also talking about, huge canals at long distances, which would be very expensive and very difficult to do. But, that it's a good idea in the sense that, we do need these sort of storage areas. And in fact, that's what they're doing in places like the Netherlands. Even in cities, they're building these things called water squares where they basically have what look like kind of normal squares in a community, in a neighborhood. Or in the middle of a city, and they're designed to sort of fill up with water when there's a big flood, hold the water there for a while, and then drain it out afterwards.
Heck, the canals would have to be as big as the Grand Canyon, wouldn't they?
Well, yes. In the long run, yes. But I think that, there's this notion that the Dutch are kind of pioneering and that a lot of people who think about this are talking about is this idea of having to live with water more, that we're not going to be able to kind of block it out with seawalls and things like that. And we have to think about ways of letting the water in and living with it, whether that's floating houses or platform cities or whatever that is. This notion of living with water, I think, is where the future is going.
What happens if things reverse and we get, as some of our guests have said, ice ages? So instead of a melting, all of a sudden, things start freezing up again. Is that conceivable?
No. We're doing a very, very efficient and good job of heating up the planet. And because of the heat-trapping qualities of CO2 in our atmosphere. So the notion that
that we would be heading towards any kind of a kind of ice age or a kind of snowball Earth scenario, you know, anytime in the foreseeable future. By that means, you know, the next couple hundred years kind of thing, is virtually impossible and not anything that we should really be, you know, concerned about. I think all of our problems are going to be in the other direction, in the consequences of a superheated planet.
I guess you'd want to be in Denver when all this starts to happen. At least you're a mile high, huh?
Well, it's true. I mean, there's a lot of people who are already, you know, beginning to rethink where they live, given the changes that they know are happening. I mean, lots of people who are selling real estate in the Outer Banks of North Carolina or in the Chesapeake Bay region or in Miami and moving to the higher ground, places like Asheville, Memphis, Denver, you know, even places in the Pacific Northwest like Seattle and Portland, mm-hmm. which are higher ground.
Higher ground, that's right.
Beginning to think about this, yeah.
Gary in Sacramento, California. Hi, Gary, go ahead.
Hi, good evening.
Hi.
Strangely enough, I'm getting two completely opposite messages from the same radio station today, and I just wanted to...
It's diversification tonight, and balance, I guess, Gary, but what are you hearing?
Well, tonight I'm hearing his conjectures, which I tend to believe because I've been following the science over the decades, suggesting that that's what we're getting ourselves into. But then, this ironically enough, this morning Rush Limbaugh, he was talking about global warming, and he was mocking it, the whole thing, and deriding it as just a scheme that world leaders were coming up with to give people something to worry about. So
keep in mind, there's a difference between just global warming and how it's warmed. I mean, there's different camps as to how this is happening. Some people do not believe it's just man-made climate problems. I happen to be one of them, too. But a lot of people also believe that there's a possibility we are in an Earth-changing cycle and the planet is warming up naturally. There's nothing you can do about it. So regardless of the fence that you're on and the side of the fence you're on, things are changing, and things are changing fast. So what you're probably getting is you're getting different views about the same thing. And, Jeff, I would guess that's probably the case, wouldn't you?
Well, with all respect, I don't think that's the case. I think that the science of global warming, of climate change, of the fact that, you know, we put CO2 in the atmosphere and it heats up our planet is very, very well established. As gravity, and I think that what Rush Limbaugh is doing is a kind of deliberate and kind of political denial of this. I think that it's a kind of deliberate misinformation that I think is frankly dangerous and wrong.
But we had more CO2 levels during the dinosaur period. We didn't have man doing anything there. We didn't have cars, plants that were disrupting the atmosphere. How did that happen?
Well, we certainly have had CO2 at various levels in the atmosphere throughout Earth history. But what's happening now is that we're putting it into the atmosphere deliberately by burning fossil fuels at a much faster rate than would have ever happened naturally. And it's heating up the planet at a terrific rate. I mean, scientists have looked into this for a very long time. I mean, they understand it's very sort of relatively simple to factor out the sort of what could be happening naturally versus what is happening because we add the CO2, billions and billions of tons of this into our atmosphere every year. And, you know, we're doing this to ourselves. We are heating the planet up by burning fossil fuels.
Let's go to Nashville, Tennessee now. Jerry's with us. Go ahead, Jerry.
Hi. I just want to balance your guest's use of the word gravity out by mentioning the word climate gate, which happened a few years ago when they found out that they were doctoring the temperatures, and, you know, of course, because they were getting money for to, you know, to keep them going. So they were doctoring things and therefore were able to get more funds to keep on going. I tend to really believe what your guest had on, what your guest spoke about a few weeks ago there, Robert Felix, not by fire, but by ice. I mean, you know, the Vladivostok ice core samples showed, I might be wrong on this, but I thought it was like 400 times more carbon dioxide trapped in those samples during the ice age than we have going on now. So I mean, how can we be going for a global warming, especially in lieu of the fact that our sun is an old star. It's a dying star. It's not blue hot. It's not red hot. It's yellow hot, which means it's a dying star. So it's losing its heat. So if the sun is losing its temperature, how can we be overheating?
Well, the solar system, though, is heating up, too. There's no question about that. I guess the proof, Jeffrey, is in the pudding. Sea levels are going up. They're not going down, right?
Right. I mean, you know, nine of the, you know, the, you look at the Earth's temperature in the last, you know, this, you know, nine of the last 10 years are the hottest years in the 20th century, 21st century. I mean, their temperatures are just going up and up. The idea that CO2 traps heat is very clear, very straightforward. I mean, look, I spend tons of time with scientists. This is what I do. And I'm not I didn't grow up as an environmentalist. I'm not like the crazy tree hugger or the NRA member when I was a kid. You know, I raced professional motorcycles. I'm not a like crazy left winger, but the facts are the facts. And the science is really strong. And I really want to push back on what your caller said about the climate gate thing. I mean, I know personally the scientists who were involved in that, and that is a completely overblown episode. And the notion that they were in any way taking money, or this was any way kind of a profit thing for them, or they were getting paid on the side for this, is simply not true.
Why is this such a political football? You know, rather than have people get together and really create dialogue to try to fix the planet, why is it such a hot potato?
Because it's very simple. You have, you know, vested interests, fossil fuel industry, who spend a lot of money lobbying in Congress and paying for think tanks and stuff to send out deliberate disinformation, because they want to continue to burn fossil fuels. They don't want any limits on that. And I understand that. That's their business. They want to continue to make money, and they're basically essentially lobbying for that. But the fact is that by doing that, they're putting all of us at risk and, you know, slowing down this transition to cleaner energy, which is not only going to help reduce the levels of CO2 in the atmosphere, it's going to create a cleaner planet, and it's also going to create more jobs, which is what we all want, after all, anyway. So, I mean, it's a very dangerous game that is being played right now.
If you were given a great deal on some ocean property, would you do it?
Well, you know what? I have no problem with, like, people living on the ocean. I think that everyone should do it. And if it was a great deal, I would probably do it. Because I think that as long as you're aware of the risks, and, you know, I know people who just bought a place in Miami. And, you know, he said, I'm going to be there for 5 years. And if I lose a couple $100,000 on this because of the real estate price declines, that's okay with me. And I was like, great, go do it. Go have fun. Go take your family there. Have a great time. As long as you're aware of the risks that you're facing with this, I think it's great. I'm just concerned about people who don't understand the risks, who have their life savings in their homes in coastal areas and don't understand that those values of those homes could drop precipitously very soon.
Well, I'm afraid sooner than later we will find out who's right. Thank you so much for being on the program, Jeff. Up next, we talk about true tales from the Casey Vault.